Hi guys, this is Ben from 561 Music. We have a new single out. It's called Deader Than Dead from our new band Nina's Yard Party. It's the second single we've released, and it's available here on the 561 Music YouTube channel or on all streaming services. Go and check it out. We spent a lot of time working on the video and it came out really great, I think.
Music free ya. Don't allow propaganda to teach ya. So many lies to allow me to show ya. It's hard just living in the world of the dead, yeah. Shots ring out, dead
and dead. No, do you hear that? LA, hear that, New York? It's so eclectic down here. It wasn't me who said it. Take a better scene. It's what we're doing. Come and check it out.
Welcome to 561 Music. My name's Ben, and Hector's not here today. So you got a little bit of Hector a couple of days ago. He did the Just Passing Through episode, and now you're going to have a little bit of me. So hope that works for everybody. You get, instead of us both being on the same podcast, you get double your money, and you get, which is no money. you get me on one podcast and Hector on the other one. But this weekend, a bit of an unusual weekend, actually, because it was light on the ground when it comes to Killbillies gigs, which is almost unheard of. We played at the Atlantic Avenue Yacht Club in Del Rey, or as my buddy calls it, Del Hay. I don't know why he calls it that. Always makes me laugh, though. And we had fun with that. We were playing with Fox Maple and Brett Statska, and it was sort of like all of the bands from our scene we know that are playing at Sunfest almost. It's like that was in Ricky's mind when he booked it, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't. It was just by chance. So we had a lot of fun there. I've never played there before. It's a small place, but I don't know how they do it, but they get great sound. It's just like on this very small stage, and the sound guy seems like he's doing nothing at all, but then you get up there and it sounds amazing. So respect to those guys. And then on Friday, so backtracking a little bit, I played with Butch and the Fat Dubes up at East Ocean Pub. Now, East Ocean Pub is a cool spot. It's this kind of, if you've never been there, it's a kind of up and coming rock and punk place and metal. And they just do a really good job. I mean, the sound was good, and it's just nice to see. I was saying to someone just recently, I was trying to figure out what I loved about the place. And then it just occurred to me, the thing I loved about the place was that there's not really that many places like it anymore. We used to be surrounded by places like that, like punk pubs where you could go and play. And very sadly, there's not as many as there used to be. So what I like about it is that it's there. So respect to the guys for making that happen over at East Ocean Pub. And yeah, then I had Saturday night off, which was very strange. Didn't know what to do with myself at all. But we have Corvallis with us today. We have Matt and Chris from Corvallis. How's it going, guys?
Going great.
Doing good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Thanks for having us.
So where are you guys from?
We are from Port St. Lucie, up north, just a little ways.
I'm from Jensen Beach.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, where do we play in Jensen Beach? I play at Taco Tiki sometimes.
Oh, there you go. Tiki. Yeah, that's a good spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
good venue.
Totally, man. You guys are in a band which is kind of a rarity down here, but I just love it, which is like an instrumental sort of rock band. And why don't we just get straight into it? Because I'm so curious. I'm sure you get asked this question quite a lot of the time, but what made you think to yourself, we're going to have a rock band with no singing?
Well, I had tried to do vocals, tried to write lyrics, and just wasn't really happy with how anything was turning out. I had played with lots of different bands on, you know, guitar and bass and stuff like that, and so I really wanted to just kind of bring that element together and just really focus on the instrumentation, and so just have a band that doesn't have any vocals.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love it. And we've had Libeka on the show, and we've also had them play our festival, and they're, you know, one of our favorite bands around here. And Doug on the drums is in Libeka, right? He's
yeah.
not here today.
Yeah, he plays bass in Libeka and then drums for us, and yeah. It was great to get to know him and have him be a part of the band.
Yeah, absolutely. Has he always been the drummer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sick. It was kind of an odd start for doing music stuff. I had been playing with a guy around here, and I had lived in Nashville for about 10 years, been playing a lot up there, and then came down here and was kind of taking a break from music. And then after playing bass for a buddy of mine, I just realized how easy it was to play shows around here. And yeah. I realized how...
Don't tell anyone.
No, I mean, it's crazy how many venues want live music, and then just hearing all of the different varieties of music as opposed to the music kind of in the Nashville box.
Yeah.
It was like, I think there's a place for this kind of music. And so initially I had recorded, with some friends up in Ohio and Nashville and sent stuff out for a drummer to record on or a bass player to record on. They would send their tracks back. And then in the meantime, I had been doing some open mics, meeting some people, did a lot over at Roasted Record where, Chris and Alex from Sandman Sleeps worked, they worked over there. They host the open mic night, and through those connections, Christina mentioned that Doug wanted to play drums in a band, so I was able to include him. Him and I started playing through some of the songs and all that, and then we needed a bass player, and so he was like, oh, my buddy Chris Shavi wants to play bass.
Yeah, wicked.
He's always down for any kind of music. Like, he'd be a great fit. He's a great hang, and so, we immediately were able to, start practicing as a band, and I had my buddy Jason that was doing the open mics with me and all that, so I knew I wanted him on guitar, and then everything just kind of came together, and since I was working on recording stuff, I had stuff that everybody could practice and, learn the parts and all that, and then since then, we've just been, try and do stuff around here and play around a show a month or so.
Nice. It's really nice to hear you say that you found it relatively easy to get gigs around here. And what I think that speaks to you as well as it does the fact that it's, getting shows around here speaks to the fact that you got a bit of hustle in you and you can kind of get it done, put gigs in, which is probably, I'm sure living in Nashville, you had to learn the game a little bit and, get on the hustle when you were there. How long were you in Nashville for?
I was in there for 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had been doing, I think at one point I was playing with 5 different bands up there, just trying to see who's going to make it, and nobody ended up making it, and everybody just sort of slowly tapered off. They weren't interested in doing music stuff anymore, and so once I kind of lost all those bands, and my wife was born around here, so we ended up moving down here, and so I had sort of been sunsetting music and then came down here and really found that people loved all sorts of music and people were really encouraging, and it's been a great experience being down here because you could go to an open mic that everything sounds terrible and people will still like get behind it and like be supportive of each other. Anybody that's learning how to play music, it's just really cool to see that support system around here.
I think so too, and I think that it's a healthier way to do it because, Nashville obviously has a huge amount, bazillions of musicians, and they're all really good. But that's awesome. But, just in terms of wanting to start, wanting to grow, and wanting to become something, it has got pretty good for that down here. There's a lot of bands, there's a lot of people who are into a lot of stuff, and it's not this kind of there's obviously this sort of retirement community of people's side of it down here, but there's a lot more young people down here than there used to be.
Definitely. It's been great. Like,
there's a good music scene here. It's kind of still a little bit more underground
compared
to like what you were just talking about as far as like the age of the people and stuff. There's a little bit more acceptance for a little bit more of our style of music now instead of, we have a saying called fish sandwich music. So it's the music that gets played when people are eating their fish sandwiches.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So yeah, that's like, that's prevalent around here a lot. But
I'm not going to say I've never played fish sandwich
music. No, but you have to.
I do know exactly what
you have to get a little bit of it. You got to get a little in there.
Yeah, totally. So why don't we talk a little bit about you guys' musical past? Like, when did you first start playing music, man?
I was definitely in elementary school. I wanted to learn how to play the drums at first, and my mom forced me to play piano first. She said, if you want to learn the drums, you're going to have to take 3 years of piano. And so,
no, that's a, I mean, good on
it. No, it was, I'm super thankful for it now. Back then, I was not. Like, yeah. I was ready to play something loud, play something heavy.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then when she had, you know, that forced me to try and, you know, learn how to read music, learn how to, you know, understand melodies and stuff like that. And then after I, as soon as I hit that 3 year mark, I started taking drum lessons and did that for a minute. And then, you know, switched over to the bass for a minute. And then once I got towards, you know, junior, senior year in high school and into college, I started switching over to guitar. And I knew how to play bass, but I sort of kept it a secret that I could play bass while I was, okay. you know, I lived in, you know, Colorado and Ohio doing music stuff out there. And
cool. Is that why you moved there?
I went to college in Colorado and Ohio right. and then just met musicians through
gotcha.
Through that out there. And then, yeah, I just sort of kept it a secret. I did bass and then moved to Nashville and realized that I could not hang with the guitar players right, down there. And so right. I was like, oh, maybe I should kind of switch back over to bass. So I did mostly bass in Nashville and then came down here and kind of switched back over to guitar. So
gotcha. Yeah, yeah, I bet there's the competition for like shreddy. It's almost like being able to fly all over the neck is just like the bass level.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. insane. Like I went there as like, I'm going to be a guitarist. And then as soon as I saw people, I'm like, I think I'm a bass player now. Like just immediately switched. So,
yeah, and you know, yeah. like when I was talking about Nashville then, I'm not, you know, I have a bad word to say about it. Really. It's just very different. You know?
It is.
It's like the hustle is crazy with musicians there, you know?
Yeah, it is. I think, it's very cutthroat there, and it's very, like, everybody's trying to sort of use each other for their own success.
Yeah.
Here, it's a lot more encouraging where it's like, you know, bands will say, hey, we've got a show. Do you want to jump on this with us? As opposed yeah. to there, it's a lot more
it's like I have yeah, this opportunity for
oh,
you.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and it's a lot of, like, you know, you can play this venue, but you got to sell 100 tickets, and if you don't, then you owe the venue money or like,
yeah.
you know, playing to empty rooms there, you know, just for that opportunity of playing at,
yeah.
you know, a certain venue or something like that. So it was definitely discouraging despite being around like some absolutely phenomenal musicians
yeah.
in Nashville.
Sometimes I felt a little bit like that in the UK living in Manchester. And not all the time. There was some good stuff in mm-hmm. Manchester, but certain venues that prestige, you know, and it's like, You would be lucky to play his stuff.
Oh,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's been around for a lot longer than I have around here.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's been doing a ton.
What have you been up to? Or even
wow, I've been up to a lot.
When did you? When it was a weird way of saying it. I don't know why I said it like that. But yeah. When did you? Have you? Were you born and brought up down here?
I was brought up down here. I wasn't born here. Yeah. I was actually born in New Jersey.
Gotcha.
But I had family down in Hope Sound area and Stewart area since my great-grandparents.
Wow,
so
okay,
I kind yeah. of moved down here when I was I've always come here with my family, but I'm from here.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when did you start playing music?
I started playing music in elementary school also, in the elementary school band in like fourth grade.
Yeah, man.
Like with getting a formal education at a young age,
yeah.
which kids don't get today.
No.
Which that's a real lack of.
I think so. I teach a lot of kids here and it always surprises me. You know, I ask about their music at school and it's either like a little bit or none. Or
yes.
loads.
And it's like there's some that really have a good program, but
yeah.
most don't.
Yeah,
most
totally.
Do not.
Seems like you have to go to a school of the arts. I think that I get a little bit of a biased view on it though, because a lot of the kids I teach are pointed towards those kind of schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's quite a few kids that I teach who have like just zero musical education at school, but then I think I'm sort of tricked into thinking it's better than it is everywhere because, you know, a lot of my kids have like go to Bach or something like that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. All right. Yeah. Wicked, man. Like, what was your first sort of instrument that you fell in love with, would you say?
Well, I come from a musical family, too. My dad is a musician, bass player, singer.
Oh, really?
And like that,
oh.
yeah. And so I've always been around it. I've
yeah.
kind of grew up as a little roadie, yeah. kind of in a way. But really, the first instrument that I kind of fell in love with was the bass, really, to begin
yeah.
with. we were all kind of multi-instrumentalists too. We all played different stuff.
Yeah.
So we all, pretty much bass. I can play rhythm guitar like that, but and then also the drums. I'm a drummer.
Excellent. I just find the bass to be, I'm a frustrated bassist. I love it. There's something magical about it.
I think all bass players are frustrated.
That's true.
It has something, because it's like part of the rhythm section, but you can also be very melodic on it.
You've
got a lot of power on the bass, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of responsibility.
You're in charge of the groove of the music.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really your, that's your job. Totally. That's the groove of it. You know, it's not really keeping time. That's the drummers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's awesome. And my friend Yaz, who works here, he's a great bass player. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, man, what would it be like to be a bass player? But one day I'll do it.
One day. There you go.
Have you played in other projects down here?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I figure. I'm just curious.
Everyone does.
I was saying there's the music scene here has been, there's a really good music scene that's available to play in, but it's just not really out in the open all the time.
Yeah.
We had really my first band that I actually played in was right in high school called Justice Denied, a punk band. and doing
good
that.
Good lad.
Oh, yeah. Punk all the way.
Yeah,
and then, awesome. So then just played in a lot of different bands over the years.
Cool. Have you ever played any of the Fish Sandwich music?
No, not necessarily.
Well, I
haven't.
Respect that,
not by choice or for, you know, as an actual band member of that, like that. But no, I haven't really done that.
It's funny, Killbillies can kind of straddle it a little bit because our original music is not that.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then, you know, we can play Wagon Wheel if we have to.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about as fish sandwich as it gets. But the most fish sandwich is probably Santeria.
Especially for Florida.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, that's definitely fishy.
I remember in Nashville, like if you're walking down Broadway, at least one of the bars at all times was playing Wagon Wheel.
Yeah.
Oh,
like it would be different music from, you know, 20, 25 different bars on Broadway, but you'd hear Wagon Wheel over here, then over at this bar over here, then Wagon Wheel over here. Like there was no time the Wagon Wheel was not playing Nashville.
You know, I think, and I believe the reason, I have a theories about this song, is because it came from somewhere kind of cool and like offbeat, mm-hmm. and then it got blasted to mainstream success. So all of the kind of, at the beginning at least, all of the kind of punks and like alternative kids kind of liked it. And just your average Joe on the street liked
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
So at that point, it's just everybody likes it. But then the problem is, now everyone likes it. Now nobody likes
it.
Exactly.
Now it's not cool anymore.
it's such a universal song, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can get behind it. But it's when it's overplayed and everybody does it, and every time you're out for a fish sandwich, you hear about it. Like, just constant, you know?
I think that a little bit of the tragedy of that is this, we were playing it the other day. We very rarely play it these days, probably every 3 months or something, or mm-hmm. someone asked for it or something. We were playing it and I was like, this is a good song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really good song.
It is.
It's such a tragedy that it got so
bad. It is a good song.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Life goes on, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You can't spend your life mourning the death of songs.
Exactly.
When did Corvallis begin?
So, a little bit like during my time in Nashville, I had sort of experimented with friends and just sort of, you know, friends that would have little house studios. I sort of had some demo recordings out there and just sort of kept on the back burner. Like I said, when I got down here and I realized that there were no rules around what kind of music you could play around here,
mm-hmm.
I realized this would be a good avenue for it. And in my head, I was like, okay, I got to record first, so I've got something to send to venues to play shows so people know what we sound like.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the opposite way that I've done it in every other band. It's always been, you know, play the shows to get the money to do the album.
Yeah.
But in my case, I was just learning how to do recording stuff and GarageBand and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and so I was like, okay, I've got, you know, I've got my guitar, I've got my, you know, pedal, my amp, like I can do this in my room. And then since everything was remote, I was able to just sort of send off bits and pieces to friends and like people that I had played with in the past where I could go, okay, this drummer would sound really good on this song, or like this guitarist would sound really good on this song. And initially it was going to be sort of just for me and just sort of like, hey, this is just kind of a digital work. And then the more I got to know people around the music scene, the more I realized, you know, I need to find people that will want to play this music live and will want to, you know, be a part of this. And if it's not this, you know, pay to play sort of scenario like it was in Nashville, and there are venues out there that, you know, even though they're underground, they're out there to play shows at.
Yeah.
You know, I need to find the people. And so I really was just sort of asking around to find, you know, both Jason and Doug and Chris here to, you know, I found people that really wanted to play that kind of music and were down with it. So it initially started as just sort of a digital thing, and then
similar things happened with me recently, where it's like a digital project that's all over the world, different people, and then, you know, it's like, all right, we got to make this a band now.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Totally. What was it? Did you say like a year old in the band, something like that?
That's about a year.
I'd say we've been about a year old now. Yeah,
that's awesome. And you've got an album and a few singles out, right? How many releases you got out?
Yeah, I've got a full-length album called Unknown Territory. Just basically the idea of kind of going off and trying something new, especially being sort of a helper in bands, where it was like, you know, I played my guitar part for a band or played my bass part for a band. It was, now that things were digital and I could, you know, record multiple tracks on things, I could add both pieces to it. I could send it off and really kind of experiment with that collaboration feature where I wasn't, you know, 1/4 of the band. I was the entire band when I was doing it digitally. And then when I've added, you know, all these guys, it's been cool to hear how the music has been able to develop as Chris hears something that's a little different than maybe I heard when I was tracking bass, or Doug hears something a little different on drums, or Jason hears something different on guitar.
Yeah.
And just sort of letting it be its own thing and letting the art kind of happen through everybody's lenses. And
you've been really good about letting us do our version of of what you have, you know, your of your music.
Like, it's been fun.
You know, I can really relate to you guys, this project, because you know, even though it's a completely different style of music, I'm currently doing something relatively similar in terms of the way it's come together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very freeing. You just, you know, just kind of go, okay, well, here's the bones. Like, you know, do the whatever part they're going to do. See what you can do with that, you know?
Exactly.
I don't think I think maybe one time I was like, all right, let's try something a bit different. But I was talking about I must have sent it out like 30 times or something to different people, you know?
Yeah. And I think as long as you have the trust in the musicians that you're playing with, the more you can kind of let go of that, be like, I know how this musician, you know, will be able to translate this song and make it their own. And I'm going to trust that process and not necessarily give like a specific, you know, this is exactly how I want the drums to sound. This is exactly how I want the bass to sound like. What drums are you hearing here? What bass part are you hearing here? And when you have that trust, I feel like it makes something that's, you know, one person's vision into, you know, a four-person vision.
Yeah.
I like it. I'll bounce off of you. Like, I'll hit a wall of, I don't really know what to do with a part or something like that. I'll be like, Matt, what do you want to do to this part like that? You know, and do you have a bass line already made up for it or in your head for it? And you'll, oh, here you go, do a little something like this maybe. Like, oh, okay, now I know the direction that, you know, you want to take that part necessarily. Sure. And then I can do my own thing to it.
Yeah.
I think it might be something to do with us like maturing a little bit, because you know, so jealousy and resentments and ego and stuff like that when you're younger really gets in the way of of true collaboration.
It does. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You have to have an ego, but it has to be a collaborative ego. A bendable ego.
Yep.
You have to have an ego. You're a musician.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, if you don't have one at all, then
you're not going to be very good.
Yeah. You at least have to feel like everyone should listen to you all the time.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think you have to be like excited about your part you're bringing.
Excited.
If you're like, this is the coolest bass part for this part, or like, this is why this guitar part sounds really cool, And yeah. I'm pumped about it. You have to have that amount of ego. But if anybody's like, hey, I don't know if that gels, like, that's do we switch to you or do you switch to us? Everybody has to have that feeling of like, hey, it's okay. I trust these guys. Like, everybody's hearing this differently.
Like, yeah, that's like,
how can we all work together?
Make the decision kind of in a sensible way rather than letting like the hot-blooded kind of, you know, sort of rather than letting like emotions, you know, rule it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which when I was younger, I was a little controlling, I was a little bit of a pain about stuff like that. Not too bad, but a lot worse than I am now anyway.
Yeah. I think everybody goes through that phase where you know, because you don't know what you want and you've got this very clear vision when you're young of like, this is exactly the direction we have to go. And I think the more you experience other bands either having more success than you or less success than you, mm-hmm. the more you realize how many paths there are to, you know, to make it. And I think you have to come to terms with the fact that you have to play exactly what you want to play and not really, you know, not think about, you know, what's going to be popular, what's going to be, what do people want
to
hear?
You have to play for yourself.
Exactly,
first,
really. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You have to be proud of what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You do, yeah. Evan,
it's going to project.
I think that when it's important to be as much yourself as you can, mm-hmm. because you can keep doing that. It's like if you have to wear a mask constantly, it's pretty tiring, you know? Mm-hmm. You can be yourself all day long because that's where you are, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if you make it while you're wearing a mask, you're just going to hate everything about it.
Yes.
You're going to lose the entire joy of playing music because you're like, this isn't what I wanted to play.
Yeah.
People like it. I'm making money at it, but I'm not about it. Like, I don't want to be about musical outlet is.
Yeah, like most of the time, like early on, being a punk rock person, but sometimes you get a closed mind and not a clear view of all the sides of the rest of the music that are out there. You just kind of get the channel, you know, the tunnel vision of music. Yeah. It's really refreshing to play different styles of music, especially given the opportunity in a band setting to do that like this.
Absolutely.
Playing a style of bass that I've never played in an actual structured band versus a punk rock style bass or anything like that. Or now I play drums in a punk rock band now also, mm-hmm. which is a little different. So I get to go in different directions. But
I think if you had that little bit of if you're a punk, you always have to be playing punk somewhere.
Yeah, you have to have at least a punk pride. I've had a punk with a really close friend of mine for about 14 years now. We've been having a collaboration thing, and
that's true. You guys have been playing.
We've been playing for a long time. We've been friends for a very long time, but. And then another friend of mine, I play drums in another more garage rock band. That's another outlet there too. It's just the different styles. It's just
down here. Refreshing. There's some really good garage rock bands.
Mm-hmm. There's
just a ton of bands like garage kind of surfy kind of area.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we do.
Yeah. There's a few actually played this festival that we just did. There was like two or three bands like that on the bill. Feel like it's kind of a thing that's happened. I mean, there's always mm-hmm. been garage rock bands, but it seems like there's a lot of them at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
There is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a movement of some kind.
It's just so, like, eclectic down here. That's the thing. Like, I'll hear stuff that, you know, Electric Splash will do or something like that. Be like, this mm-hmm. is so far outside of the box, and it's so refreshing.
It is
to hear
really
that
outside
stuff,
the
you
box.
Know?
Yeah.
Like,
no, do you hear that? LA, hear that, New York? It's so eclectic down here. It wasn't me who said it. I think that's wonderful. Wonderful to hear. That makes me super happy. And I agree with mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we listen to some of your music? Let's do that now.
Cool.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Oasis Root Carver Bar is in Seagrape Square on Indian Town Road. And it is a carver bar. If you don't know anything about carver, it's a Polynesian root that you grind up and you mix with water. And it has been in Polynesia for potentially thousands of years. It's an old thing that they used for kind of ceremonial and also sort of leisure purposes. It's meant to be something where, you know, that brings people together. You all take a shell of carver and chink them together and say bula and have it together like that. It's meant to be something to bring people together. It's has a kind of an effect, which is, I guess, a kind of a slightly warming effect. It just kind of makes you feel nice. It's not particularly intoxicating. It's not like drinking alcohol. So the atmosphere in a carver bar is sort of like a cross between a regular bar and a coffee house. It's pretty chill in there. You get all sorts of different types of carver bars. Some of them are more like a club, you know, there's sort of like black light and EDM playing. And some of them are more like a cafe. This is one of the cafe type of ones. It's super chill in there. If you're looking for somewhere to, I don't know, maybe go and do some work on your laptop or go and have a chat with friends, it's perfect for that kind of thing. There's a foosball table in there if that's your jam, or baby foot as they call it in France. And yeah, Jim, the owner, is a really cool guy, and he has very kindly sponsored our podcast. So thank you very, very much for that, Jim. They also do a poker night in there, all sorts of things going on at Oasis Root Carver Bar. 561 Music is sponsored by Live Music Community. It's where we film the podcast that you're listening to right now, and it's also where I work. Gavin, Hector's son, was a student here for a long time, and in many ways he's the musician he is today because of the teachers at Live Music Community. We taught him not only about his instrument, but also about being in a band, and his band, Unemployed Youth, accomplished a lot of goals, mostly band etiquette, how to work together, and all of the nitty-gritty that goes into being in a band on a day-to-day basis. The student signs up for lessons, learns their instrument, joins a real band, and decides the direction it goes in. And we can take people from very young age, you know, 6 or 7 years old, all the way up to 80. You know, there's no age limit here. We've run an adult program for people who want to be in a band as adults. But really, the main focus is on the kids and getting them playing together and in bands. We are also a studio, a live stream venue. We can record audio or video. The Killbillies live album, Warts and All, was recorded here. It was recorded during a live stream that we did during COVID. Justin had a great idea to record live streams during COVID. A ton of bands came in and it was a real success. Outside of that, we can record albums, we can help you with your EPK, and we have full audio-visual capabilities here. LMC is in Palm Beach Gardens on the northwest corner of Military Trail and North Lake Boulevard. And if you go to livemusiccommunity.com, you have all the information you'll need right there.
Okay, so we were just listening to an ad for LMC, and as you know, that is where we're sitting right now. So have you got any advice for upcoming bands?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest piece of advice is to keep playing with as many different styles of music as you can. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be exactly what you're listening to at the time, but being able to play, you know, in this style of band, in this style of band, I think really helps develop you as a musician.
Yeah.
It helps you be able to take different genres into other genres, being able to play, you know, take sort of, you know, punk stylings into a jazz context or take jazz stylings into a punk context. I think that really helps develop your sound as a young musician and really develops your sort of niche, and playing exactly how you want to play, I think, is super important.
Yeah.
You're playing things that you're proud of, playing things that you're excited about, and playing in a style that suits you, I think is going to be, you know, is going to continue to bring joy, you know, no matter what kind of music out there.
Yeah, definitely. And while we're on that subject, yeah, I'd like to add that I think it's pretty important that, say you're really into reggae, you know, dig the old stuff, like get into some of the roots of the stuff, because that's where you'll find your style through that, you know, like you'll find like the direction through the old stuff.
Yeah. The old music is like a school, it's like a teacher in itself because of the styles of music, like you were saying, Matt, but the techniques that are required to play those styles in a proper manner. you have to learn those techniques if you want to play that style of music.
So, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So it's hard to find people that are proficient in all those styles, but all the music that you can listen to, it's right there. It's proficient.
Yeah, it is.
It's,
everything is
now
so
online.
Available.
You can look just about look up any song that you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To tab, anything like that. And so
it's so available. I always think it's a little bit like a kid in a candy store in the sense that it's all so available that it's a little bit overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It can be.
Yeah. It's crazy coming from, I think we've all been before kind of the age of where you can just look up anything on, go to Google and you can learn anything just about, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Now we come from the time when you had to actually learn how to play from a book or from, or a teacher or an actual physical one-on-one.
I know, like the way that I taught myself how to play chords originally is not the way you're meant to play chords.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. No, really no, don't get caught up in that, what other people are going to, how they want you to play is another thing I would think, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Play your own style and play the way that you want, but take constructive criticism.
There you go,
so that you can progress, because being in your own head will hold you back.
You know, that's good advice. Take constructive criticism. The people that I've seen that have done best coming out of here have been able to do that. You know, they haven't let their ego control them, and they've been able to listen to other people and absorb it and grow, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hector's son, Gavin, is a good example of that. You know, he'll listen to people when they say things about his playing, and he'll take it on board and grow. And he's just such a good drummer now, you know.
Cool. Yeah, I think finding people that can give you good advice, that want to see you succeed in your very own way, I think those are the people you got to listen to.
Oh,
people that, you know, can see like what you're doing, how you're doing it, and be able to, you know, send you on a path. You know, I think having trust in older musicians is super helpful.
Yeah.
You know.
No,
just because you don't like the music that you're hearing doesn't mean that it's not hard and fulfilling to play.
There you go.
That's another thing.
True. And you know, Hector, if he was here, would agree with you 100%, because he plays in Kilbillies now on a stand-up bass. Mm-hmm. And if you'd asked him 5 years ago, you know, would you be doing that? He'd be like, no. You know, but so, now he's really into it, and through playing it, he's gained a respect for it. You know, he's got to this point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think probably, you know, as soon as he tries doing that, it's like this entire backlog of music that you wouldn't necessarily
think
about. Standard. It's like, you know, you've got all this, you know, rockabilly stuff. You've got, you know, the old jazz standards with the upright. It's like this entire new world opens up.
No, absolutely. It was really, I respect him for doing that, actually. I respect him for just being like, you know what? Because I was like, we need a stand-up bass player for the band. Mm-hmm. And he rose to the challenge. And
that's
he just
great.
Did it. And he's been at it for like 4 years now, and he's killing it, man.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, we got some of your gear up here. Why don't we take a little bit of a look at that? So what are we looking at here?
So this is my Line 6 Podgo. That is really what allowed me to record music easily. I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old in the house, and a lot of times my only time to, you know, record music is after they go to bed. And so I wanted a way to, you know, record music that was relatively silent, where I didn't have to, you know, mic an amp in the closet or anything like that. And so this has been huge for, you know, developing tones. I used to have like a big pedal board with all these different types of pedals on it, and this thing has been super helpful to, you know, set up whatever amp I want or whatever pedals I want, have, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of pedal options, you know, right at my fingertips. I can set up a different patch for each song. I can run it with or without an amp. So when I'm playing live, I usually run it without an amp. And then, you know, those different buttons are just, I treat it like a pedal board.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know, I can turn stuff off and on the same way I would. And
Are you using like a traditional like amp? Like
I've got a Fender Hot Rod Deluxe.
Yeah, cool.
It's in Texas Red.
That's awesome.
It's a great amp, and so I basically treated the pedals on there the same way I did on my pedal board, where I was, you know, trying to find exact tones that made sense with the amp. And, you know, then when I go to record, I've got the same settings on that amp. And so I just turn on the amp and it's like I'm able to record immediately with that. And it was, it was a great purchase.
When you're recording, are you doing it, like how are you getting your recording done? Like, is it on a Mac?
Yeah, it's on a Mac. It's in Logic. I basically started with GarageBand because I had no idea what I was doing. And then through using that, I was able to learn about, you know, different signal chain stuff, you know, different effects. And then once I got kind of used to that, I realized that Logic was just GarageBand expanded.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that crazy. You know, I had friends that were using Pro Tools and Ableton and all that stuff that was like this insane learning curve.
Yeah.
And then when I went from GarageBand to Logic, it was like, oh, I went from, you know, 3 EQs in GarageBand to now I've got 8 different EQs. Yeah. Or, you know, I've got these 6 different reverbs to, you know, 35 different reverbs in Logic.
So. Totally. I mean, the good thing about Logic is that it's easy and logical to use, but it's professional grade quality. It's like,
oh, it's
fine.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And it's one thing that I think was pretty cool on the album and the EPs that I've done is I use GarageBand for iPhone.
Yeah, cool.
It's completely free and has...
I've messed around with it a little. It's cool.
It, like, a few years ago, it was horrendous. Like, not it was basically useless, but now it's crazy the amount of, you know, different synth stuff you can do on there, different, you know, drum programming to a click and everything like that. It's super user-friendly, so if there's anybody out there that, like, wants synth sounds but doesn't necessarily know how to play the piano or doesn't have the money to pay for synth stuff, I would highly recommend GarageBand for iPhone. It's
incredible. There you go. That's awesome. Do we have another picture of gear? I feel like we do.
That's my amp there.
Cool.
On the right, and then
my bass.
Yeah, there you go. That's kind of all of our gear there.
Yeah, this is not everybody's.
We've got.
Is this a rehearsal space?
This was actually down at Tough Times in Pompano.
Right. Of course.
That place is awesome. It's been great playing shows there, and Chow's been amazing to work with. Like, he's always down for new music, always down for, you know, putting together these crazy shows. We had one that there was like, I think Blabscam was the headliner, and then there was like a reggae band, and then there was like an acoustic guy, and then us, and it was like this big eclectic night, and there were people that showed up and came out. And
I feel like you could put you guys on with like just about anything, like in a really, really good way. Like, it's, I would feel, you know, I'm in a ska punk band, and I think it would be, you know, it could be you and then that, or, you know, just because
it fits to a lot of things, for sure.
Yeah, I just think it, if you wanted to get like a really cohesive night together, you just sort of want to make sure that like either one or two of the bands is more like you, or one or two of the bands are more like the other thing.
Exactly,
But what you are, it could go with pretty much anything.
Yeah, I think that's been the fun thing about playing shows.
Even with the venues that we played, different venues, it's gone over well as far as how it's received just from the different crowds of...
Yeah.
Like you said, from punk crowds. We played up at the Stamp in Vero Beach. Yeah. We played up there, and that's mostly a punk crowd for that, for the matter like that. And then it was, everybody loved it.
Yeah.
It fits to a lot of different.
Well, it has almost this like physiological element to it, the kind of music you play where you feel it, you know, it's like big chords and it's a symphonic and it's, you know, like, I just think it's really interesting. And it's also very interesting to hear you play it in a pared down way like that, because it has a completely different vibe to it. And It would have been like, you know, one way you could have done it would have been like a million pedals and make it super complicated. But I like the fact that you did it really pared down like that, because you just the bones, and I thought it was really interesting. And what songs did you play?
We played Union and we played Boniford. Okay. So, those two have been Union. I had written forever ago, and then it was initially written on the acoustic guitar, and so there was a lot of kind of dynamics that were built into the strumming initially. And then when I had pedals, it was like, okay, this is a different type of dynamics to add to this. And then with Bonifer, that was the first song that I had recorded in Nashville that was all my own. I used a drummer that I had played with in a band. And then I just tracked guitar and bass, and we just recorded it in his house. He was trying to learn how to record, and so I was like, hey, I've got a song maybe that we can do here. And
total
so that
experiment.
That was back in like 2012 that was initially done. And then when I was working on kind of revamping this, I'm like, you know, maybe I can revisit this song. Maybe I can rehash it. And so I ended up using him on drums for that song as well. So it was cool to hear, you know, what his take was, you know, 10 years after the fact or whatnot.
I like it that you've been bringing. I'm sorry.
No,
I like that you've been bringing in some of the other songs that you have that are not structured for being necessarily a heavy song or a full band song that you've been introducing to that we've been doing.
Yeah,
so I kind of like those songs also because you're able to do our own thing with that also as far as giving it a different vibe.
That's kind of always the idea is to try and retranslate songs as much as possible. So songs that were initially written for, you know, just sort of synth and ambient stuff. It's like, well, these are still chords here. Like, can we create a live version of this that's its own special thing?
That's been
versus, you know, an album.
I like doing that.
And so it's been fun because it's just a blank slate. It's just, these are the chords. This could go heavy. This could go light. Like, everybody kind of thinking with these parts?
Down,
and so it's cool to be able to, you know, write something on GarageBand by myself as I'm picking the different lines and then take it to everybody and be like, what are the sounds you're hearing on bass? There's no bass part. You know, what do you think the drum beat sounds like here? There's not really like a distinct drum part or like, you know, here's kind of what the synth melody is doing. Can we translate that to guitar or can I kind of get the same vibe through pedals if I'm just doing rhythm stuff? And so
it's a really nice idea, nice way to make music. Have you ever written anything together or is it always this like passing the sort of project back and forth?
It's mostly been kind of passing the project, but we've gone through different parts of ideas together. I think for the most part, our practices are kind of running through the set and it's usually kind of, you know, getting ready for a show
more
or something like that.
Driven,
as opposed to just sort of straight jamming. But there definitely are moments that, you know, one of us will come up with something and we'll kind of all come together and, you know,
it's surprising what'll come out sometimes too.
Yeah. I'll like pull out the phone and be like, I gotta record this on my phone and just sort of like remember what everybody's doing.
Like Jason will surprise me.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden he'll just come up with something. It's just like, holy crap, dude, I didn't know you had that in there.
That's
always, whoa, man.
It's always
like
fun
just he'll come out with just play the surf song type thing or then he'll just come out and play this crazy metal lick or it's just he's really versatile
because of the sort of mood that this music puts it, this music sort of forces you to be in it and in a mood in the mood that the song is, so I can see how while you're playing it, you know, certain things are just going to come up almost naturally. You'd be like, well, this has to do this here, you know.
Exactly. And it's all been very like dynamic based, so it's all kind of like, all right, let's get big, let's pull back, or like, let's go from like really straightforward poppy to like, let's just, you know, punch in the face.
I like that we get to use our musicianship more than just playing. You have to use your
loud and soft dynamics are massively underrated in music.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's great to hear that you guys have, you know, taken full advantage of it.
Definitely intentional about that.
Yeah.
It's just something that you forget to do. And what, you know, if you're just sort of learning just a set list of songs, you know, you write the songs and you have your verse, chorus, then the solo goes there and everything. You always forget you just have a whole bit which just gets quiet and it gets loud. It was that amazing, you know?
Yeah. That's been like, I grew up listening to a lot of like Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
And so I think it comes from that sort of where it's like you've got music coming in over here and then you've got, you know, a scream coming in over here or like you've got this sort of swirl of different sounds.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely been influential. It's not
definitely influential.
Yeah. I don't like think about it when I'm writing, but I think
this is absorbed.
Yeah. I think whatever you're inputting is what you're going to be outputting whenever you're playing music. You know, if you want to, if you want to write in a certain genre, you know, it's important to listen to music within that genre.
Yeah,
or
for sure.
Even if you want to hear things outside of that that you want to take place, you have to be inputting as much music as possible to
put
out
music. No, that's absolutely true. And I think one of the things I like about the instrumental music that's like guitar-based, like you guys and LaVica, is that it has this kind of edge to it. That there's something about like prog, traditional prog.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit woolly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's something about this that just has this great, it's a bit more muscular, has a bit more of an edge to it. And I just, you know, really like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. So what have you guys got coming up?
Well, we've got a show up at the Stamp in Vero Beach on May 11th.
Nice.
We're playing with Santa Pine Hills and our buddy Bobby up there. And then I think one more band. We're still trying to figure out who the last band is going to be.
I'm not sure.
Up there. And then we're playing with Black Tusk on May 25th at East Ocean Pub. So
yeah, that'll be a good
we're
one.
Looking forward to that. We've gotten to know Michael at the Dead Dreams Booking, who's been super helpful with finding
really
shows to play.
Nice one.
I can usually just message him and say, hey, do you got anything going on or anything you can include us on or anything you're working on? He's always, you know, he's booking into like October by now of different shows.
Definitely an integral part of this of our scene now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Really done a lot of good for the music.
And I think he's
musicians
really
and bands. He, really good guy.
Yeah, he's been able to really make East Ocean Pub what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's changed hands and it's been around for a while. I think it was like distillery at one point.
It's been around for years and years.
And so I think it's finally kind of, you know, creating its own identity.
You know, the funny thing about East Ocean Pub is that it has that other room with that stage in there.
Yes.
It almost looks like a speakeasy, something out of like Berlin.
It's
in
a whole different like one side feels like this. You go over to the other side, and like you said, it's like almost like a speakeasy, smaller.
I'm dying to do something in that other room.
Oh, it'll be so fun!
It sounds really good in there too.
Really,
it does.
Cool.
Yeah, I've done a couple things in that room, but
that's awesome.
Yeah, it is really cool.
So we've got Killbillies has got. On Friday, we've got the Kilted Mermaid in Vero, which is always a good time.
Yeah,
it's like a restaurant in Vero, and we love playing there. It's super chill in there. The owners are really cool, and we've been playing there for a decade. So looking forward to that. Then on Saturday, we're doing a duo at the Square Grouper in Jupiter. And then I'm doing a solo gig on Sunday at a place called Golden Juicery in Juneau. And that, Golden Juicery, is a really interesting place. So I'm there on Sunday, the 14th, from 10 to 1. And just the drinks they make in there, everything's super fresh. It is just a delight going there. I don't play almost any gigs in the morning. This is like the only one. And the reason I play there is just because it's just a really cool place. If you've never been to Golden Juicery, you could swing by on Sunday and check it out. But listen, guys, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. I love the band, and I love what you had to say about the Florida music scene. It makes me very happy to hear this.
Oh, it's been great.
Yeah, wicked.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Peace. Take me by the scene. It's what we're doing. Come and check it out.